Hello, this is Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now please join me in welcoming my co-host, a man who wins Best Supporting Actor every week on this show, Rick Hess.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I just want to thank our producer. I want to thank, I'm teasing, Mike.
Yeah, tell it to the thank you cam.
Mike, you, my friend, win leading man every week.
Thank you, Rick.
Cause and you look good, even when you're scratching under your shirt there. I hope it's not some kind of rash that our listeners got to worry about.
They don't. But you know, this is audio, so I don't have to worry about it. Versus, we just taped a video for Education Next, and Rick's, you know, got
dude,
old, what, 1988 circa denim shirt hanging open.
It's a nice shirt, though. I buttoned up for the Laura suggested that you button up. That's true.
And she did not get a picture.
Laura, so that's two thanks to you already. We're only 75 seconds in.
All right, Rick, not too much jammering today. We have a lot to cover. All of a sudden, there is all kinds of news in education land.
Really?
Or in Reformville, as I called it last week.
Yeah, but I heard you got an exiled from Reformville.
I know. Andy Rotherham was questioning whether I still live in Reformville or if I've moved on to hopeless land or Contrarianburg.
What's the answer?
That was pretty good. I like that. Yeah, I think to some degree he's right. I don't have to live in Reformville to actually talk about it.
To visit?
No, I can be on the outskirts.
You're a Reformville tourist.
I'm on the outskirts. That's all. I journey in from time to time. Rick, on the other hand, now lives in Blogville and is just doing great. Rick has straight up getting all kinds of visitors.
I gotta say it's a nice medium. I'm starting to feel abashed that I was so long down on it.
I don't know what the Ed Week readers must be thinking about the vitriol you're putting out there.
Although I don't know about you were teasing me about my word counts, babe. But it turns out there's room in Blogville for longer form as well as shorter form.
I guess so. All right, but no more wordiness right now, Mickey. Let's get started. Let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
The much-anticipated Race to the Top finalists were announced last Thursday. What are your reactions to the announcement?
Now, for one thing, this is the bad thing about doing a weekly show. I mean, this is really late, isn't it, Rick?
Yes, this is old news, baby.
All right, so everybody knows there's the Sweet 16, the 15 states plus D.C. that got named as finalists. The Reform consensus seems to be that is way too many. How can you explain New York, who failed to pass a charter school cap law, Ohio with, you know, Ted Strickland, who hates charter schools, Kentucky doesn't have a charter school law, on and on. Rick, why do you think it turned out the way it did?
Because I think the secretaries, what they say in Texas, is so far showing all hat and no cattle.
Ooh, ouch. That's a good one.
I think he keeps talking a big game. It's the way they talk about the transparency, the way they've talked about being tight on ends, but loose on means. Mm-hmm. I think what we've seen is a pattern of them talking in language that I find real reassuring, but of the actions not necessarily living up to the billing.
Yep. I mean, you know, I guess we'll find out all the details afterwards, or so we hope. I suspect that the original list was probably shorter and that whoever state number 16 was politically important to the Obama administration.
You know, I mean, two other quick thoughts on that. One is, sure, we'll find out after the fact, our good friend Andy Rotherham's non-contemporaneous transparency. But I got to say, any education writer worth his salt is going to go to their editor the day after the conclusion of a federal grant competition and say, hi, I'd like to spend several days wading through videotape and thousands of pages of applications to write a big story that puts us in context. Mm-hmm. Is going to be a reporter that's going to have a really hard time giving an editor to give him another 5 minutes the rest of the year.
Sounds like it was a smart PR strategy on their part.
They're Eduflex, know their business.
But you know what, Rick? The blogosphere, us bloggers, will be there. Mm. We'll watch those videotapes. Or assign some intern to do so. Okay, Mickey. Topic number two.
All right. The Education Department's Office of Civil Rights is ramping up its efforts to enforce civil rights legislation as a tool to combat the achievement gap. Will this work or backfire?
Oh, oy vey.
Oish.
So, we once called NCLB the mother of all unintended consequences, but I don't know. This could be the grandmother of all unintended consequences.
Well, actually, this is the progeny of NCLB in some sense.
Yeah,
this is just
true.
One more.
That's true. I mean, so for example, they're going to look out at school districts that have a low proportion of African-American or Latino kids taking AP classes and a high proportion of white kids doing so, and they're going to start an investigation to see if the district is discriminating. Now, it's possible. I'm sure there's out there among 16,000 districts, there are some that are, you know, have teachers who look at African-American kids and say, you can't possibly take these tough courses. So fine, go after those districts, right? But most districts probably are doing what they can to get more kids into these classes. But, you know, it's a long process. It starts in kindergarten, getting kids prepared for these kinds of things. So what's going to happen? All of a sudden, every school district in the land is going to worry about a lawsuit from OCR, and the general counsels are going to say, hey, we got to do whatever we can to push minority kids into these classes so that we don't get sued by the federal government.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this story written over the last couple decades. The Ed Trust has pointed out, Mark Schneider has pointed out, that when you look at the transcript studies of what high school students study, the percentage of students taking, say, Algebra 2 is up dramatically. It's up 3 or 4-fold since Nation at Risk. But the kids don't know any more Algebra 2 on NAEP. Our notion that we're going to universalize up has already led to a notion where we push kids into classes, but they don't learn any more in those classes because we just dilute the curriculum. Mm-hmm. So the notion that we're doing anybody any good by using a blind racial bean counting exercise to make sure that kids in various tracts of schools reflect the ethnicity of the school as a whole, without regard to the fact that, like it or not, there are socioeconomic relationships in this country between skin color mm-hmm. and the circumstances that bring kids to school. And I'm not sure this is going to serve any of the kids all that well at the end of the day.
No, and it could be unconstitutional, you know, because the Supreme Court is very wary right now about looking at a kid and looking at them based on their race, mm-hmm. primarily.
As well they should be.
As well they should be. And so we're running straight into this again.
Have they indicated that they're doing anything like addressing funding inequalities, you know, within a district, or kids get the same quality teachers?
Sure. I mean, they did mention teacher assignments. You know, minority kids not getting high quality teachers.
We're going to strip mine. We're going to start strip mine in other schools.
You know, when I talked to Ruslan Ali today, the Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights, and she was very clear that they're going to have robust remedies. They would go into a district and develop robust remedies, early interventions, feeder patterns. I mean, they would basically be, you know, taking over school districts to try to force them to do a million things to get a different result.
You know, I mean, right, it was last week, if I recall, that he was up there yammering on and on those keywords.
Yeah, and here, you know, today it was robust remedies, monitoring, compliance reviews. I mean, it's schizophrenic. Mickey, topic number 3.
The president of the Detroit School Board, Otis Mathis, is an admittedly terrible writer. Here is one quote from an email published in the Detroit News. Quote, if you saw Sunday's Free Press that shown Robert Bob, the emergency financial manager for Detroit Public Schools, move Mark Twain to Boynton, which have 3 times the number of seats than students, and was one of the reasons he gave for closing school to many empty seats. Can he still be an effective leader without the ability to write?
I sure he can. I mean, you know, we've had presidents who I'm not sure they could write or speak. And then, you know, it's a free country. I can't even recall off the top of my head. Is the Detroit board appointed or elected right now, or what's the situation?
That's a good question. I think it's elected.
I think it's
right
still
now,
elected.
You know, if it's elected, look, citizens have a right to choose their board members. If the guys, you know, I wouldn't vote for the guy. I don't think. But if the citizens of Detroit want to vote for the guy, then so be it.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, you got to feel for the guy. I mean, he was very open with the reporter that did this story. He said, look, I'll admit I'm a terrible writer. You know, his friends on the board had warned him that these emails he was sending out, that somebody was going to make a deal out of this and it was going to get in the press. But he said, look, you know, this is my reality. He was in special ed in Detroit public schools. They just sort of passed him along. So he understands the system's failures. Saying that you have to be able to write well to be elected, it almost smacks of the old literacy test. That doesn't feel so good. But, you know, all that said, this is a school board. Could we aspire to find somebody who is fairly well-educated to run it?
Mm-hmm. That seems like a reasonable aspiration.
Oh, thank you, Rick. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We know who is always reasonable.
Hold on. Don't tell me. Don't tell me. Wait. Don't tell me. Okay, tell me.
Amber Winkler here with her research minute.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Did you see the last segment? Mickey there trying to do some more ad-libbing. I like that. He's trying to get up to be maybe the best supporting actor role. He wants to get.
I like it.
But he doesn't have enough in the script, so he's trying to weasel his way in. I like that.
Best boy or best grip.
Yeah. Oh, best boy, best grip. What is a best grip?
Well, you know, and it worked, you know, but the problem is it starts to blow the cost structure of the podcast. This is why they made Valentine's Day with, like, Julia Roberts only had 6 minutes of screen time because then they only needed her for 5 or 6 days of shooting, so they had to pay her $2 or $3 million.
Yeah, don't think you're cutting my minute anymore.
Julia Roberts for 5 months is more like $20 or $30 million, apparently. Who could afford that?
All right, Rick, real quick, Hurt Locker, was that the right choice for Best Picture?
Oh, it was a good movie. It was a good movie. It was a better movie than Avatar, but, you know, Avatar was more of a cinematic moment. I would have, on that basis, I think I was leaning Avatar.
Okay. All right, Amber, are we going to talk movies or are we going to talk research?
We're going to talk research, and we're going to talk this interesting yet flawed report from the Education Trust called Stuck Schools, which ask an important question: what happens to low-performing schools over time? Analysts examine grade 3 through 8 reading data for 5 consecutive years from Indiana and Maryland. They conclude that 64% of Maryland's low-performing elementary and middle schools, defined as schools in the bottom quartile, rank as high-performing in reading. Indiana's low-performing schools fared worse, however, with over a third stagnating. So, does this mean that Maryland is a model for school turnarounds? Not really. There are several problems with the analysis, but one of the main ones is the way that the analysts compare proficiency growth in schools identified as low, average, and high performing. To cut to the chase, schools that begin with low proficiency will be more inclined to improve because of regression to the mean. So it should come as no surprise that low-performing schools averaged more growth. Second, these aren't schools, mind you, that are performing above the state average or have moved from the bottom to the top quartile. They've simply made gains that are higher than the majority of other schools in the state. So this report is less about dramatic transformation than it is about a step in that direction.
Boom.
Wow. That was a lot in there. Was it too confusing? Well, was it wordy? What was going on?
Let's tease that a little bit.
Okay. So we're talking about schools. They start with schools that are in the bottom quartile.
That's right.
And they say, okay, over time, how does their growth in getting kids to proficiency compare to other schools?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And other schools in their state?
In Indiana and in Maryland. Yes.
So they're looking at two states. You're looking at the bottom quartile schools in each state, and you're comparing those to the other schools in that state.
That's right. After they've labeled them low, medium, and high performing. Right.
And so this makes sense. You say regression to the mean, and that because in, say, Maryland, which has a very easy cut scores, right, and therefore in most of the schools in the state, you've got, you know, most of the kids already have proficient, and therefore they can't make much progress over time.
So it's already a ceiling. So I think it was in Indiana, like 92% of the high-performing schools.
So, and this actually touches on what we were talking about with the Office of Civil Rights a moment ago. So they're not saying that the children as a whole are learning more. They're saying the percentage of children making proficiency is going up in these schools.
That's right.
So, I mean, once again, part of the problem here, it's the Ed Trust's way of seeing the world, is we don't actually care how much kids are learning.
Right.
We care about whether kids who weren't over the hurdle are getting over the hurdle. Right. That's fine. That's an important thing. Mm-hmm. But it really troubles me that we keep, without any hand wringing at all, allowing that to become the only definition of what we care about.
Right. And the point in the report is that in Maryland, at least, there aren't that many stuck schools, that there are these huge percentage of we have succeeded in the accountability age of moving all of these low-performing schools dramatically forward. In fact, the recent statement of principles on NCLB that the Democrats for Education Reform and the Joel Klein group put out cited this study before it came out, saying a new analysis by Education Trust shows what can happen, that schools can be improved dramatically.
Right.
And you're saying, Amber, not so much.
Not so dramatic.
So it's interesting, right? When you have a hurdle set at 4 to 6 inches off the ground, it's amazing the number of third to eighth graders can clear a 4-inch hurdle.
Yeah. And I mean, just keep saying high improving. I mean, you really got to dig into the language and you read press accounts of this stuff, because it really, on the surface, it sounds like they made this dramatic turnaround and they went from low to high performing and then blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the language is exceedingly important.
So these schools aren't just stuck. Most of them still suck. Is that what you're saying?
That is what I'm saying. They made like a small gain, but we got to keep in mind the gains would have been made anyway. Because of how they did the analysis.
Okay, so what song goes along with this?
So we've got an encore. We're bringing back our favorite Britney Spears. Since we've got mistakes in this analysis, we have Oops, I Did It Again. Mm.
You know, what's so great about that song, Rick, is that this is not the first time that Education Trust has made some kind of mistakes in its analysis. I mean, there was, you know, famously a while ago, their Break the Curve stuff, which a friend of mine did, and that, you know, was a good idea, which is to try to find schools that are high poverty, high minority, and are high achieving. And they found thousands of schools. And later, Doug Harris dug into that database, and he found all kinds of weird anomalies. And if you really looked at schools that had consistently high performance, almost all of those high poverty schools dropped away.
Whoops.
I did it again. Okay, it's now time to rate that reform. Hello, Stafford.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you.
So, I'm just noticing that it looks like your Rate That Reform is not the length of a
no, it's very
college
short,
essay
in fact.
This week. Okay, good.
Well, last week's Rate That Reform was complicated. So.
No, they're going to start saying college essays are the length of a Race to the Top application.
Ooh, I like that.
What about the one minute college application videos that are now on YouTube? If you applied to Tufts, you could send in a 1 minute video. Anyway. Moving right along, today's story is from Ionia, Michigan. And if you are from Ionia, Michigan, here's a word to the wise. Don't pretend to start a food fight, or pretend to graffiti on the walls, or pretend to pull little Sally's hair, because it's just as bad as the real thing, according to this district. That seems to be the lesson at least being taught to the classmates of 6-year-old Mason Jammer, who was suspended last week for curling his hand into a gun and pointing it at another student. The move, says the school, made the other students uncomfortable, so they sent little Mason home. Okay, I get it. We want to crack down on violence, even pretend violence. The problem is that this kid is 6, and he doesn't get it. So, if I pretend to point a gun at someone with my hand, I get a week off from school to stay home? So I just thought this punishment didn't fit the crime, nor did it solve the problem, which was to teach little Mason Jammer that you don't want to shoot people. But I will give the school some credit for its good intentions, which is to teach kids about violence, so I give it a D.
Wow. You know what they're teaching little Mr. Jammer? To be French. Terrorists are going to show up, and he is going to curl into a fetal ball, just like the French in, God almighty, 1940. This is just appalling. Look, people, we're raising our children to live in a real world. I understand we don't want kids packing heat on camp. No problem. But for God's sake, we're going to go ballistic about kids pointing their fingers? People.
I can't believe this. This is for real. You know, I think I've driven through Ionia, too. And I think there's a big highway that goes through there. And the people in Detroit are tough. I have to say, I think I saw a lot of other hand gestures when I was flying through Ionia. So maybe this is maybe they're sensitive about these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you're saying, I guess they must not like kids playing cowboys and Indians. Of course, that's not PC these days to play that anyways. Is that outlawed as well? If you pretend to pull a bow and arrow?
Ranch hands and Native Americans. Right. The PC term. I'm sure his mother is making up for all the time he's losing in school with pretend books and pretend lessons.
Stafford, that's good. You should write something about this. This should get national attention. Mm-hmm. This is ridiculous.
I didn't think the two of you would respond so strongly.
Wow. This is... God almighty. You know what, people?
They would put him in a timeout.
It's a real world. Let's try to strike some kind of reasonable balance, people.
Rick is shaking right now with indignation.
We're going to go let Rick calm down now. That is all the time we've got. Thank you, Stafford. That was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Rick.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli. Until next time. And this is the Education Gadfly Show at edexcellence.net. And we are signing off.